We have one of my favorite folks along today for this next segment, Jason Blair, my co-author of Chartwise at Flying Magazine. So I mean, that's just a little bit of Jason's role. Of course, he's a designated pilot examiner on at both Part 41, 141, and 61 schools, and he's a master instructor. He's been flying for decades from that western.
That's a painful way to think about it.
Kalamazoo, Grand Rapids area, and given lots of flight tests. And holy smokes, you've written a bunch of books. And Jason, welcome.
Glad to be here with you. It's a pleasure to be here. Wow. On the midweek Oshkosh.
Yeah. So, well, that kind of took care of the whole show there. So
yeah,
we're
good, you know.
Well, I think this is going to be favorites day. I just, you know, I'm looking at the schedule. I'm going, wow.
It's kind of a fun day to be here.
It
I was
is.
Chatting with Julie before you guys came in too.
Exactly.
Well, see, another ASA author.
I know. It's almost like they're an active publisher, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're doing a really heck of a good job of getting us out there.
I remember when you told me about this first one that I saw was an aviator's field guide to tailwheel flying. Which is one of my favorites.
It's certainly one of my favorites, too. And as a matter of fact, I was a little scared when I wrote it, to be honest, because tailwheel is always contentious, right? I mean, everybody's got an opinion about tailwheel stuff. So, you know, you throw
in the
that
sense
out there.
That it's valuable or it's not that important.
No, no, no.
No, I mean, how you do it properly.
Oh,
so,
I see.
You know, always wheel land? You always 3.8?
Yes, of course. Whichever one you say you want to do, I'm going to go ahead and agree with, okay?
So. Well, did you see that video of the DC-3 that...
I did. Yeah, and pretty tough way to try and take off there. So.
I noticed the first thing when that airplane was rolling down the runway, the tail never came up off the ground. And I said, oh boy.
You know, and the trauma on that stuff is you look at some of these older aircraft that we fly in the DC-3, obviously with Julia, this is when we lose one, it's gone. I mean, we're not getting this back. And you kind of have a little tear come out because it's a piece of history gone. And I think that's really kind of one of the unique things about flying a lot of the older tailwheels, too, is you're a custodian of history in many cases.
Believe it or not, it's not really gone. It just becomes parts.
It becomes parts or a data plate, and maybe somebody rebuilds, but a lot of them do disappear. And, you know, we have a family airplane that's, with best we can tell, there's 17 of them left, and it's Myers OTW, like baby steerman. And, you know, my wife's father has it, and we were kind of thinking at one point, maybe this will become a museum piece. And we said, whoa, no, you got to keep this flying. It's a perfectly good airplane and annual. Got to let these things out.
But you own a tail dragger yourself, don't you?
You know, I'm going to be honest. It's actually under my wife's name. So we bought it together. But, I think we need more women owners and pilots. And
she owns a tail dragger.
A tail dragger that she lets me fly sometimes.
Right.
It is that one. As a matter of fact, you know, the irony of the book was we wrote it. And then somewhere in the process, we decided to buy one. And then I called ASA and said, hey, have you finalized that cover yet? And they said, no, why? I said, well, give it me a week. We're going to find a nice fall picture. And bought the Stinson, flew it back up from Texas, and put it on the cover. I mean, what else can you ask for? So,
tell us about tailwheel flying. What do you think about it?
You know, I love tailwheel flying, actually. It is certainly more challenging. Quite obviously, there's a reason the manufacturer started building tricycle gear airplane. The accident rate is lower. We know that. But it doesn't mean you have to be an unsafe tailwheel pilot. If you do it right, get some good training, and there's some fantastic people out there doing it. And let's be honest, I'm a little younger than some of the older generation, although I'm still starting to not be the young guy in aviation. And we need that next generation doing it. So that's kind of, you know, we started doing this, and I've flown a bunch of them and started collecting notes, and that turned into a book. So I'm really kind of hopeful we see a younger generation of pilots continue that lineage of tailwheel aircraft. And there's brand new modern aircraft being produced today that are you know, doing this too. So
I really do believe that learning to fly a tailwheel, particularly landing, taxiing, maneuvering it, and takeoff, makes you a better pilot in the other aircraft.
There's no question
fly.
That it does.
It is a direct transition. There's something about the attention required.
You mean those things on the floor called rudders?
Yeah, not just the rudders, but the all-over attention that it demands. It says, okay, so we're getting close to the ground again. I need to remind you that you need to be all in right now.
Absolutely.
And feet off the brakes.
Feet off the brakes, please.
Well, that's helpful. So, just pretend you don't have them. It would be better that way.
You know, it's interesting. There's actually a Letourneau University does their primary training in a tailwheel aircraft. It's a modern, I think they're using the Citabrias or the Super Ds, if I remember right.
Well, the learning curve at the very beginning is steep, and it takes a while to get up on that first plateau. But once you get there, you have a pilot that is going to be more transitionable.
Absolutely.
I love making up new words.
I think that's in the dictionary now.
It's
a unique environment, and it lets you do some things that you don't do in other aircraft. You know, I have a couple friends that have Stinsons as well, and they were up on a recreational aircraft field a couple weeks ago, South Fox Island, up in the middle of Lake Michigan, where a cell phone doesn't work anymore. Kind of a cool spot to go and disappear with your airplane. These aren't things you do with, you know, your modern Cirrus as much, and fantastic aircraft for what they do, but they're a different flight environment, and I think it's important that a, you know, really truly proficient pilot looks at different environments, tries to do it all.
Well, yeah, I had a Citabria for many years, and I only bought it because the guy that was teaching me to fly happened to have it for sale, and I said, oh, I want to buy an airplane. And I remember dearly getting checked out at the old Sky Harbor Airport that's gone now in Chicagoland, but he used to put a lot of crash and dash in my logbook as I tried to get checked out.
Well, yeah, you know.
It keeps you busy, but, you know, that's what keeps a pilot sharp, is challenging yourself. It doesn't have to be scary, but
right.
If you don't ever keep your brain functioning, I mean, you get stale.
Absolutely. Well,
and let me remind you that even a super modern airplane, okay, technically advanced.
Sure.
Again, see, I'm creating new definitions. Has a free castering nose wheel.
Right.
What is that?
Right.
That's a tail
wheel.
Tail
wheel in front, you know.
Yeah. So if you're flying it like you fly that tail wheel aircraft, you're going to not be the Cirrus pilot that burns up. Thank
right.
you very much.
All
We've
those seen brakes.
It. The brakes,
yeah.
Literally.
Yep.
We had one on our airport burn the wing off.
Wow.
Overheated the brakes.
Yeah. Trying to make a turn, right?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, it will happen.
Yeah. Whoa.
So, in fact,
that is what I thought first time I flew a Cirrus, as I said, oh my gosh, this is like a tail dragger.
Yep,
oh,
just reversed.
I got it. No, yeah. Once I thought of it like that, it was easier to taxi. And
yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. Does your Stinson have heel brakes?
No, we've got toe brakes in.
Okay.
So I used to have a Champ that had heel brakes too, and
yeah,
I learned a valuable lesson in that one time in the backseat.
I bet you did.
That was,
okay.
You know, don't get your shoe stuck in the heel brake.
Oh.
Especially when you're teaching a couple spins.
So, yeah.
It's very, very interesting.
It does.
Very, very,
you know,
quickly.
You get creatively to get that shoe off. So.
But you know what I think it does too. I think tail draggers give you a respect for an airplane.
When you pull up at an airport with a tail wheel, there's a different look that many people give, and whether it's a modern tailwheel or an old tailwheel, and you know, it's not as common, so it is kind of fun to go out and do that, and you meet some really cool people when you're doing it too.
Absolutely.
But you don't just have a tailwheel airplane book, you've got this wonderful middle altitude.
And have you ever seen a book on middle altitude flying?
No.
Yeah, that's what we went to, too. Nobody does. And I think it's a really dangerous environment of flying for people who aren't super proficient at it. And it's a step-up period. So a lot of people, you know, they start with a smaller aircraft that's flying 8, 9, 10,000 feet. And if they don't make the jet jump and they're going 35, 40,000, they jump into something like a 414 or a Navajo or a Malibu, you know, things like that. And you have different weather considerations. You have the oxygen considerations.
Well,
you
and hypoxia is really tricky because you can get away up to 14,000 feet without oxygen
right.
if you're not
but
there.
But if you're at 22,
long.
You're going to have problems. As a matter of fact,
well,
the
you might
airplane
have
on this
problems
cover, you know,
at 12.5 if you're older.
Right.
Or you're a smoker.
Well, or even 8 or 9 if it's nighttime, that night vision
That's
has an
exactly
effect.
Right.
And so you have different considerations.
Old people scare easier, too. I've noticed that.
And experienced
instructors.
Personal thing. So we get scared easy.
I've had personal experience with hypoxia between 9 and 12.5.
Sure.
And now I carry a pony bottle.
Great thing to carry.
Because I know that I've had issues, and it's just better to have it there. If I'm not feeling 100%, pop on the oxygen.
Yeah.
Brings me right back.
Even
it's
the last
amazing.
Couple minutes before you're going to kind of come back down,
exactly.
You know, gives you that refresh. So
but you know something, I know. I don't want to run out of time without asking you about something else. I don't want to minimize your books because we all know how tough they are to write. But
well, and I'll tell you, there's two more coming as well.
Okay.
Oh, good. Yeah,
we'll talk more about that.
We won't talk about titles yet.
Yeah,
okay. No. But you're a designated pilot examiner.
I am.
And as short as we are of pilots, of flight instructors. We're also short of DPEs, aren't we?
We are short of DPEs. And I'll tell you, over the last 10 years or so, we've come down maybe 30 or 40% around the country. But we've just had some recent meetings. I think we're going to see some changes. As a matter of fact, I know you wrote a little bit in Flying about some of this. But we're going to see some changes coming up in the system. The examiner boundaries are likely to disappear, so an examiner won't be stuck to their FISDO district. They'll be able to schedule CFI rides without having to go through the FISDO to do that. And most importantly, you know, we've talked with the folks in the FAA, and they are committed very quickly, especially in some of the high-density training environments, to bringing out a bunch of new examiners. They're going to be working with that process over the next couple months. So I know a lot of people around the country are seeing problems with, you know, long scheduling waits for check rides. I think over the next few months, we're going to see some of that free up and help that, you know, get a little bit easier to get check rides, especially in the high-density environments.
Oh, I hope so, because that creates a bottleneck that slows down rebuilding the pilot ranks.
It does, and, you know, we have people doing training, and it's fantastic if they can push them through, but if they can't get them a check ride, it's not only timely, but it's also expensive. As somebody waits 3 or 4 or 5 weeks and tries to stay current
exactly.
to get that check ride done, it's important to keep them moving through.
Well, you know, I think that's a really great point, and but I want to make sure that people can find your books and find you, and where would people go to find any of those?
So the easiest spots are actually for the books in aviatorsfieldguide.com. It's really easy. All the books are going to be there. This is a series we're starting with ASA. We've started with these two. There'll be a couple on aircraft ownership and buying coming out. It'll be the next tease titles for you. We're actually working with a couple other authors to bring titles in there. I don't claim to know everything, so we find the right authors to write some of these. And also my website is jasonblair.net, which if anybody has questions, whether it's, you know, somebody taking a track ride with me or just has something I can help them with, feel free to reach out, email, and make a phone call, and I'll help when I'm not in the air.
And if they were in the Western Michigan area, they could schedule a check
ride. Absolutely love to do it for them.
Wow, so. Jason Blair, this has been really fun to have you on board with us this morning, and thank you so much for joining us on Attitude Adjustment.
Thoroughly enjoyed it, and if anybody has any problems with any of the chart challenge stuff, make sure you email Rob. He's the one that gets the chart parts wrong, not me. So, you know, sometimes we have some fun with these.
Thanks,
I really
buddy.
Enjoy doing that with you as well.
Thanks for joining us.